Thank you all for joining us on our World Peace Diet call. Sorry for the little quick break there, but we're ready to get started at 6 o'clock, a couple of minutes past 6 o'clock Pacific time here on September 18th, 2014. And this is Dr. Will Tuttle, and I'm delighted to be able to be with you all this evening. And this is the World Peace Diet Circle. So as we start our time together, as we very often do, we just take a moment and tune in to the precious opportunity that we have for the next hour to hour and a half, typically is how long we usually spend on these calls, to focus on, as Gandhi said, not only understanding that there can be no positive social transformation without positive personal transformation, but also that we can ourselves be the change that we would like to see in the world, and to understand more deeply what it is that our relationship with animals, non-human animals on this earth, is all about, and our relationship with each other as well, and to make an effort to deepen our understanding and our capacity to live the teachings of what veganism, or the teachings of veganism, is pointing to, which I think are the same teachings of the ancient spiritual traditions that are really living, I think, at the very core of our being as beings of awareness and consciousness. I think that at a deep level, our fundamental wisdom and compassion is always shining. It gets, in many ways, covered over by the cultural program of this society that we're born into here at this time on planet Earth. And as you know, if you've read the World Peace Diet, which I think pretty much everybody, if you're on this call, you have, and are working with it, that the idea in the World Peace Diet is that the program, the cultural indoctrination that we go through in our society derives in large part due to the underlying disconnectedness and violence that is injected into us from the time of little children by being forced to participate in the meals in our society, the mealtime rituals, where we reduce beings who are as sentient as we are and whose interests are as important to them as our interests are to us, to mere pieces of meat, to commodities, to objects that we milk and confine and manipulate and mutilate and so forth for very questionable uses for food and products and so forth, and that we're born into a culture that has been doing this for quite a few centuries and millennia, actually, maybe 8,000 to 10,000 years at this point, in terms of herding animals. And so we're part of, I really feel this, an awakening of human consciousness so that we can live our lives in a different way, in a way that reflects our true nature, a way of living that is aware of the sacredness of our life. So I just want to thank all of you for having the spiritual breakthrough that is required to make these connections. And some of you may think that you didn't really do anything to make this breakthrough happen. It just happened. That's kind of how I feel, really. I mean, I don't feel like I really had a choice in it. It just life circumstances unfolded in a way that when I realized the violence towards animals, I didn't want to participate in it anymore. But I certainly feel that I was helped along the way by others, and that's the reason for this call, I think, in many ways, is so that we can be effective in helping others along the way and also be effective in thriving and living our lives as passionately and as authentically and as wisely as we can in a not-yet-vegan world. So greetings to you all, and I send you my love and appreciation for sure. And there's a lot to talk about here this month. Since the last month, we have a lot of news, a lot of issues seem to keep unfolding in the world of vegan advocacy. It's so exciting, really, I think, to see all the different progress that's being made. In many ways, I think we probably all feel it. We're taking, you know, two steps forward and hopefully only one step back. Sometimes it feels like we're taking three steps back and for every one step forward. But I think in many ways, we also get the feeling that we can really see a lot of progress being made in terms of people's awareness of the importance of including non-human animals in the sphere of our kindness and compassion, growing not only in our society, but I think in other societies as well. And, of course, there's the usual resistance, and then there are the issues that come up within the vegan animal rights and animal welfare communities. And that is something else that's, you know, people are always talking about that too. So I'd like to begin our time, as we very often do, with a short meditation type event. And one of the things that is happening right now, and I feel good about it, I've been working off and on over the last year or two on creating a new CD of healing meditations for spiritual awakening and for blessing all beings. And I'm calling it the Eightfold Path for Opening Hearts. And I've come up with eight different meditations for eight different aspects of healing and awakening that have to do either directly or indirectly with veganism and spirituality. And so the eight ones I'm working on, and this should hopefully come out within the next couple of months. Hopefully, it should pretty soon. I've got it basically finished in terms of the writing. It's just a matter of doing the recording and doing the music and blending all that together and then getting them out there. So let's stay in touch about that. And the eight different aspects of this. First one is a meditation for developing intuition. And I, as you all probably are aware, I really feel that spiritual intuition is a key ingredient to being an effective advocate, to being happy, to having a spiritual path that's authentic and so forth. That's number one. Number two is harmonious relationships. And that's both with humans and non-humans. Number three is world peace. Number four is animals, non-human animals. Number five is earth healing. Number six is radiant health. Number seven is abundance. And number eight is joy and gratitude. So those are the eight aspects that I've identified in focusing on in these meditations. And the shortest one of all, I was kind of looking through and thinking, which one should I share with my wonderful friends on the World Peace Diet Circle, and I thought I'll share the shortest one because they are, you know, I mean, this isn't maybe the best time to give a long meditation. They're not actually all that long. They're probably, I'm not exactly sure, maybe 10 minutes each. Okay, so this is one of the shorter ones. As I said, it's number five. It's Earth Healing. So if you can get comfortable, if you're in a place where you can close your eyes and just sort of relax and turn your attention within, I think that's wonderful. And if you're not, then just, you know, if you're driving or whatever, then just keep driving and keep your eyes open and be aware. And you can kind of go along with this too, I think. It's not the kind of thing where you have to zone out necessarily. Okay, so we can join together now in this meditation, which I think shouldn't take too long. Let's become aware of our breathing, letting go of any thoughts of the past or future, and entering more deeply into this present moment. I open to our Earth, our planetary home in space, this beautiful oasis of life in a sea of stars. And as I look at our Earth from space, I send love and appreciation to her and open to her majesty and her beauty and her vulnerability. Zooming slowly in, I enter her atmosphere. Her blue skies and white clouds enfold me, and I marvel at her meadows, rich with flowers, grasses, clover, and birds. Her forests with pines, oaks, maples, and birches. Her lakes and rivers with jumping fish. Her soaring mountains with cliffs, rocks, and glaciers. Her rolling grasslands. Her stark deserts. Her oceans with islands, atolls, reefs, waves, and leaping whales. Her frozen polar regions. And her tropical jungles teeming with life. I am aware of her suffering also. Human exploitation has been mindless and relentless. I see all that, and I see a transformation taking place. Humanity is awakening. People are refusing to own or exploit the earth or any of her creatures. Kindness, respect for all life, peace and healing are sweeping like a wave through the collective consciousness of humanity. The old indoctrinated habits of violence towards animals for food and other products are evaporating as we all realize the sacred beauty and interconnectedness of all life on our earth. I can see the rainforests healing and thriving as the chainsaws are forever silenced. I see forests naturally reclaiming the monocropped fields, which are no longer needed, and habitat for wildlife being restored. I hear birds singing and see rivers and streams returning and their waters naturally purifying. The oceans and reefs coming back to life as people need only a fraction of the resources now that everyone has transitioned to plant-based diets and lifestyles. I see the climate stabilizing and beautiful webs of communities and abundant organic gardens as we remember our purpose and honor the earth as the splendid paradise that she is. The skies are clear and fragrant breezes caress the hair of joyful children playing in the sunshine. The old ways of human devastation are gone forever. The earth is healed, a bright blue-green jewel, basking in the light, home to a wondrous celebration of life. I give thanks, knowing this is so, and so it is. So we can just perhaps hold in our hearts a vision of the true nature of human beings, that at the very heart of our being we are radiating wisdom and compassion, joy and understanding, truth and loving kindness, that we are awakening from the delusion of separateness, and that we are also part of that awakening of humanity and of human consciousness. And we give thanks not only for our loved ones and for ourselves for unfolding and answering and saying yes to the call of evolution and awakening, but we say thanks to everyone who's also answering this inner archetypal call to awaken from the delusion of our cultural programming. So thank you all, and we just move forward. We dedicate our time together to creating a field of consciousness of peace and sustainability and freedom and loving kindness for all beings. So if you have any questions or any concerns or comments, remember that this is an interactive time that we have. I remember from having done this now for a few years that the time sort of suddenly flies by. It seems like we have all this time. And the next thing I know, I'm trying to cram in the last few things. it gets to be an hour and a half later, you know. So feel free as we're going along to press *6. And when you do that, I can actually see that you'd like to say something, and I can unmute your phone. So that's the basic idea here. And there's several things that I'd like to share about, maybe just in the beginning, besides the fact that I think that this kind of thing that we just did, you know, connecting with a meditative state of consciousness is really an important part of veganism. You know, although I do want to hasten to add that I certainly think we're all completely free to do that in whatever way we like. You may have thought that particular meditation was not your cup of tea. You'd like to do it a different way, or do something totally different, or just be in silence, or pray to a being that you feel is omniscient and helpful, and so forth. But whatever way you feel will help you to question the materialism in our society. I think that's one of the fundamental things that the World Peace Diet is about, is that we're all born into an essentially materialistic culture, in this philosophically, that we think that we're basically just objects. The physical reality is pretty much all there is, and we try to understand things in terms of physical causes and effects, in terms of seeing ourselves merely as biological machines and so forth, and animals the same way. And one of the things I've talked about is I think this is really an artifact of living in a society that is killing and abusing and so many millions of animals every day. We just naturally become very shallow. We can't imagine that these other beings are eternal consciousness, magnificent expressions of life. They're just pieces of meat, because that's how we treat them. And pretty soon, of course, we're seeing everything the same way. We see everything as a machine. We see ourselves as machines. And if it's a machine, it has no feelings, and we can mutilate it and not feel bad about it, and so forth. So we disconnect from the natural wisdom. But in my years of studying world religions, and I'm sure a lot of you have done the same thing, became aware that not only in the great world religions there's a fundamental questioning of that, but also in many other traditions, shamanic traditions of various kinds, poetic, artistic traditions, as well as, I would say, individuals who are on a spiritual path that is non-theistic. I want to say just a couple of words about that. I was thinking about this before the call. A lot of the religions are non-theistic. You know, I think that's something that's important to realize, that, for example, Buddhism, Jainism, Taoism, Confucianism, those four, you know, the major world religions, are really non-theistic. There's no God involved at all in these traditions necessarily. And they're really about psychologically awakening and clarifying our consciousness, and becoming conscious and mindful and aware, and working with our consciousness. And there's not a sense of a separate or of a deity that is the creator necessarily. That's not really, it doesn't have to be part of a spiritual path or of a religion necessarily. In the West, we think that it is. But I think it's really important to be aware that spirituality is really about working with mind. And there's quite a lot of interesting research that's been done, which I won't go into too much here because I think it's not really related, but just basically that people who regularly meditate or who have a practice of mindfulness, a meditation, or perhaps of a yogic tradition of some kind, or prayer life, but they've done quite a bit of studies on the physiological changes, for example, that happen in people who are meditating. They find that that basically the aging process slows down, that the brain cells actually become more connected and complex, that as people get older, if they're regular meditators, instead of losing gray matter in their brains, like it seems to happen generally. It actually gets thicker and more complex, and the folds get deeper in the brain, and all these kinds of things. There's this whole sense of fundamental physiological changes that take place when people are practicing a practice of letting the mind become more quiet and be more aware, not just be continually lost in doing and thinking. And so for me, it's been, I think, a foundation in veganism to practice every day, quieting the mind so that I can realize that what I am is not just a thing which is active and doing and was born and will die and that's it, but that to have this broader and cultivate a broader awareness that there's much more to life than just this life, this lifetime. And I think when we begin to see that, it's very helpful to us in our vegan journey and in our vegan advocacy. Number one, I think, as vegans, when we're eating lower on the food chain, taking in a lot less toxins and taking in less misery and violence and fear and all these, are not causing this, that there's a general lightening up of our hearts and of our feelings and of our emotions if we continue with it long enough and really work with understanding the cultural program and not allowing ourselves to continue on. Even as vegans, we can continue on once, even if we give up eating meat, dairy products, and eggs and wearing wool, silk, and leather and fur and all that, we can still have the same basic program of competition and judging and blaming and shaming and criticizing and all these kinds of things going on as vegans, which tends to create a situation that some vegans feel that other vegans aren't very nice to them, or that we're fighting with each other, or that we're not really at peace. So it's very important, I think, to see veganism in the context of a larger spiritual path that we're on, and that it's going vegan is if we are practicing a religion, as say a Buddhist or a Taoist or a Christian or a Jewish person or a Hindu or Muslim, whatever, that being vegan and living our life as best we can as a consequent vegan will make us, I think, a better Christian, Hindu, Jew, whatever practice we have, Taoist and so forth, because we're really living in harmony with the actual essential core teachings of that spiritual tradition. And if we're not practicing any religion, if we consider ourselves to be agnostic or atheist or following the Wiccan tradition or whatever it is, that it will help us to plunge more deeply into a more profound understanding of the nature of who we are. And essentially, I think that's really the journey of a human life. It's a journey of awakening to who we are, or to what we are, is perhaps a better way to say it. What are we actually as human beings and as beings? In Zen, we would say, what is your original face? What is your original face before your parents were born? And to answer that, to actually answer that question, to have that question. See, the thing is, you really can't answer the question. You can't answer the question. The one who answers the question is the problem. This me that I think I know who I am. That's the impediment to the whole thing. This sense of being a fundamentally separate self with a name and a form and a history and all these things. So the spiritual path, I think, is really pushing us in a very fundamentally healthy way to, when we ask these deep questions of who am I, or what is life about, or why am I here on this earth, what is my life about, to recognize that we are manifestations of a larger life, waves in a larger ocean, in a sense, and that we're related. We're related with all other expressions of life. And getting out of the prison of being only concerned about my own self. And this is really the core of veganism, I think, and of ahimsa, and of the spiritual, authentic spiritual path, is that we realize that as long as my mind is in the prison of only of seeing in this way, that I'm a fundamentally separate self, I've got to get what I want and keep away what I don't want and be in a struggle with the world, then I'm going to be miserable and make other people miserable as well. And this is really the foundation of, I think, in many ways, of capitalism and this whole economic system just sort of basically, in many ways, reinforces that in us. It reinforces separate selves competing with each other. Our language, English language, for example, is very pronoun dense. It's hard to even think without thinking, I'm the you, he, she. It's always everything is always concrete bricks of separate. It's always there's this very deep level where we're trained to separate. And, of course, other languages don't have that kind of thing. So, but just to be aware of it, is the main thing. And we begin to realize when our mind gets quieter that all of these that this economic and linguistic and cultural and social and relationship type of the underlying paradigms in our society are very heavily influenced by the practices of owning animals as food and reducing them to things and creating a hierarchical society based on might mix right and power over other beings. And so and really veganism is turning the whole thing upside down and quite profoundly. And so it's a very powerful, endlessly, infinitely powerful spiritual practice to become a vegan and to live this at a deep level. We're not just talking about the violence of dairy cows and how they're getting electroshocked. That's part of it, but really going much deeper than that, the sacred feminine repression of that within us, opening to the truth of being, and then allowing what veganism is, which is radical questioning and radical inclusion, allowing that to be the fragrance that emanates from our thoughts, words, and actions in a way that I think naturally begins to help others to awaken. I think, essentially, and this is the feeling I have, is that a spiritual transformation in an individual really is something that is satisfying at a deep level more than anything else for us as individuals. And it's also, I think, what really gives the energy to a social movement, powerful energy of transformation, of optimism, of empowerment, of joy, of creativity, of celebration. That's really, to me, what the vegan movement is. It's an enormously powerful and creative movement that's based on just the very foundations of the universe and the most fundamental universal principles. It's rock solid. I mean, it's beyond rock solid. It's like star and sun solid or something. It's based on the basic truths that just resonate in the marrow of our bones and of the interconnectedness of all life, and that as we live our lives as best we can to be part of a harmonious and creative unfolding of life and really live that way. It doesn't mean our life is suddenly just easy, but it means that we're connecting with the unique gifts that we have to bring to the world in a way that's significant. And I think that's the key. And I think we all begin to realize, too, that our life here, our time on this earth, is really quite brief. And so instead of trying to quickly cram in a bunch of experiences where we accumulate a lot of stuff, we begin at some point to realize that it's an opportunity to grow and learn and contribute. And that's really the most satisfying and at the moment of death when we're looking back, and after death when we're being aware of our life, I think this will all become much clearer. But right now, in this, during our life, we're very often distracted from that by our cultural programming and the stories that we're constantly being told by our society. So anyway, that's something to me that to me is going to be become more and more important for us to understand in the vegan movement and the connection between veganism and spirituality and social transformation. This is really the thing that I think is the frontier, and I think we're seeing the results if that doesn't happen. You know, we're seeing more infighting. We're seeing people who proclaim themselves to be abolitionists, and other people that say they're animal rights people, other people that say they're animal welfare people, and one is better than the other or worse than the other, or people that say they're vegans or vegan activists. And I was finding, you know, there was actually a thread on the Wilkie's Diet Facebook group recently, and the discussion I thought was excellent, and talking a little bit about the fact that there's going to be a conference in Los Angeles in March called the Animal, what's it called? It's called the Vegan World Summit. It's put on by Bob Linden. And I was, from the very beginning, Bob, you know, invited me to speak there. It's in March of 2015. And so I said, sure. And he wanted to know who I thought would be good. And I told him different people, including Karen Davis, the founder of United Poultry Concerns, who's a very powerful vegan advocate and does a lot of wonderful work. But we see this situation developing where other people who are involved with this conference are starting to judge some people as not being vegan enough, not really vegan. You know, they're maybe advocating for less cruel ways of killing animals in the slaughterhouse. And as vegans, we shouldn't do that because that will make people feel good about eating chicken because they know that now the chickens are not killed in a cruel way. And so we shouldn't do that as vegans. And, you know, and other people say, well, if it's, you know, if they're going to be killed, we should at least try to find a way to kill them that's not so hideously terrible as, you know, the way chickens are killed actually now. It's unbelievably bad. They're just dragged through, their heads are dragged through this cold electrified water, and which does not actually stun them. It just renders them unable to move, you know, but they're still fully conscious and sentient. You know, they just can't move. They're just sort of shocked. You know, and then very often they pull their heads up and they don't get shocked. And so then they end up going down the line and they pull away from the cutting blade and also because they're still aware. And I talk about this on the low peace diet. So, you know, they end up, it's a terribly painful ordeal, either whatever happens, whether they're stunned and killed, or they miss it and they end up getting boiled alive at the next station where they're put into the hot water. So anyway, I can understand why people who are vegan activists would also want to improve the conditions or at least make them a little bit less absolutely satanically terrible. But the point I'm making, I guess, is that if we're not doing our inner work, we're just only looking at the outer behavior and seeing this whole thing merely as an exercise in tactics and strategies and so forth. It's very easy for us, I think, to get quite shallow in our understanding and end up fighting and arguing with each other more than we're than we're actually helping to bring the vegan message to the world. And there was in the thread someone, I think it was Meg Graney, who's one of the World Peace facilitators. She went through the training when we were at the farm in Tennessee a few years ago. We did a training there, and she made a good point. I think she said that when she reads the original writings of Donald Watson, who when he coined the word vegan, at that point it was all about abolition. You know, that veganism is about abolishing animal abuse. And it's not about reducing it, it's about abolishing it, it's about not participating in it, and also doing the best we can to help bring this awareness to others, and that animal welfare, people who are in favor of improving the welfare of animals, are also logically abolitionists as well, because the only way you can improve the welfare of the animals is to stop this cruelty to them, which means going vegan. So veganism, animal welfare, and abolitionists, it's really in many ways a false dichotomy or a false trichotomy, I guess you could say, in that case. And that the underlying work that we're doing is really basically the same. And the emphasis instead, I think, of arguing over tactics should be on how well am I living this, actually, because it's through living this, I think, that we really find the power of the movement. Okay, so that is something that I wanted to, I think I've pretty much covered that. There is someone who has a hand up here, and you've had your hand up for a while. I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone, and then I'll get into some other, a number of other things I want to talk about that I think are critically important to just, you know, to talk about and to be aware of. Some of them are practical and some of them are more philosophical, but I really love answering or responding in some way to comments and questions. So this is caller, area code 774-256-95. I don't have a name, but you're unmuted. Hello.
Oh, hi. Hi, my name's Mimi.
And,
Mimi, hi. Nice to talk to you. It's been wonderful listening to you.
Thank you.
This is my first time calling in, so it's been really amazing to me. I want to thank you so much for your book. It really changed my life, connected all the dots for myself. And I've been
Great.
Passing the message on to everybody that will listen. But I also wanted to mention, too, that I actually have an organic vegan hair salon, and
really?
It's we touch a lot of people. There's a lot of people that come in. I believe we're probably one of the only, if not in the very rare amount, of vegan hair salons. And we're not, basically we're more than that. We are there to pass the message on about veganism. And we get people, and this what I find a lot of the time, and I was speaking to a fellow vegan this morning about this, that I find a lot of people associate just food with being vegan, or maybe the leather concept as well, but a lot of people don't realize how it all spills over, too, into, you know, even making shampoos or products for your skin and your hair and what is involved with it.
Right.
For example, yeah, my... one of the largest ingredients that they put in a lot of the products are silk. And
oh, really?
I'm sure you're, yeah. And silk is, as you're probably aware, I'm sure I'm not telling you anything new, but is derived from silkworms, which are boiled alive specifically for that purpose.
So silk is in, I mean, I haven't seen silk as an ingredient in personal care products, I don't think. I mean, maybe I have. Maybe I just don't buy those kind of personal care products. But I didn't know silk. Is that what you're saying? Silk is an ingredient?
Yes. Yeah.
Really?
Silk protein. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
So there's a lot of variations of ingredients of animal byproducts, animal products themselves. Animal fats, things like that, are in a lot of the products that
right.
women, especially, you know, are putting in their hair, on their skin, and all of that.
Yes.
So anyway, we actually are going to be hosting Cowspiracy in Central Massachusetts, and just wanted to kind of inform you of that. So we're excited about doing that, and this certainly isn't a plug from my salon. It's basically. You know, I wanted to thank you for all the work you're doing, but also just to let you know that what you, from reading your book, actually is kind of funny. One of my clients came in one day, and she wasn't even vegetarian, and she had this humongous button on, and it said, "I'm vegan." And
really?
So she said, I said, "You're vegan?" And she said, "Yeah." She said, "Have you read the World Peace Diet?" And I said, "No, I haven't." She said, "Well, here." And I'm thinking, oh, I don't know where I'm going to find time to read this book. And I was vegetarian for many, many, many years. And after reading your book, I turned vegan. And I want to thank you for that.
Great.
And I do see a shift in society, especially within the last, I want to say, 6 months. You know, young
right.
and old, people are becoming more aware, asking more questions. So, you know, what you have done for me is tremendous, and I thank you so much, and I continue to pass the word on. So,
wow. Well, that's very interesting. I just want to add, okay, so basically when people go to a hair salon, they're using pretty much all the time, unless it's a salon like yours that's consciously vegan, they're using products that were tested on animals, products that have animal body parts in the actual products. And so what you're doing is providing an alternative to that and also educating people. I think that's really interesting, you know, because usually when we think about spreading the vegan message, we think about, you know, opening up a vegan restaurant or having a vegan blog or teaching veganism. We don't think about opening a hair salon to spread the vegan message. So I think it's great to see this is another avenue, because personal care products and just how people see themselves and how they, you know, how they deal with their bodily image, I guess, essentially, when they're causing misery to animals, how can we feel really good about ourselves if we're doing that, actually, and about our bodily image, which is what we're supposed to be improving? So when you have a vegan hair salon, it's actually a very powerful message to feel good about yourself and feel beautiful from the inside out,
yes.
Not just from, you know, the products, but from how you're living your life. You know, you're living in alignment with your values, and you're not causing animals to be mutilated and imprisoned, so you can have some part of their body smeared in your hair or your face or somewhere, right? I mean, so it's really, I think it's fantastic. I hope maybe you can write an article or do an interview or something to raise awareness about this, because I'm not that aware of anyone else doing this. It's really interesting.
Right. And thank you.
Yeah.
And yes, and that's what we're all about when people come in. You know, we try to shine that light within. And so that grows stronger for them. But also, too, like, for example, I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, there was this big trend where everybody, all the women, all the girls, younger girls,
oh,
were,
yeah,
wearing these feathers in their hair.
Right.
And we did some research, and though the birds were specifically mated or bred to produce those feathers, and the only way,
right,
to get the feathers off, I believe, was like by boiling them alive. So everybody was wearing these feathers, getting them from hair salons, you know, and all, it was the big trend to have these feathers from these birds that,
right,
were abused. So things like that, like, we're not really aware of, but we're, you know, it goes so deep as far as it's so integrated with every single thing. I tried to find a fertilizer this year, and I didn't have enough time to make compost, and the only organic fertilizer I could find had blood meal in it. And,
mm-hmm,
after researching that, finding out that that's from factory-farmed animals, so I couldn't even really, and I talked to the farmer down the street who said that's what they use all the time to grow their corn to feed the cows.
Right.
So it's like,
yeah,
it's so integrated in every single thing.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, the blood of cows,
yeah,
grows the grain that the cows then eat, you know.
Awful.
That's really, really very ironic and perverse. But there is actually, I just mentioned, Madeline and I discovered at Ace, I'm not sure if it's true in Massachusetts, but where we are in California, I mean, Ace Hardware is pretty much a national chain, and Ace Hardware does have, at least here, these large, whatever they weigh, 50-pound or these big bag or 25-pound bags of compost that are totally vegan. You can get, I mean, they're just tree products. So anyway, that's a little tip. You can maybe find that because we have a veganic garden, and Madeline actually we just put up the sign over the gate today. We're all happy. It's paintings of all kinds of vegetables and fruits and things, and it's a food forest, and it's all veganic, and I think that's another frontier for us as a society, is to get away from, even if we have organic fruits and vegetables and so forth, to not be using animal byproducts in growing those plant-based,
right,
foods. So you do everything veganically, and so if we can't find them, then we have to kind of make our own compost. But I think if we demand this, you know, but the marketplace will somehow begin to comply, you know. So, well, great. Well, thanks so much for calling in, Mimi. And also, I just found out a couple of days ago that Madeline and I will be going to Boston for the Veg Fest, October 24th, I think it is, 25th, 26th. And so we may be doing a few other lecture events in the area. Maybe we'll do something in central Massachusetts, maybe something in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, you know, a few days before and after, or probably before. So we can maybe be in touch about that, or if you, I'll probably be in touch with a few people about, we just found this out. So the first time I've ever spoken at the Boston Veg Fest, but as I understand, it's one of the biggest ones and has a really good reputation. So
yes,
actually great work you're doing, yeah.
Yeah, we've had a booth there, I think 3 years now in a row.
Oh, really?
So we go to like all the Green Fests and the Veg Fests. And yeah, we are very close to where it's located, very active in that community in Worcester, Massachusetts. So, but yeah, we'd love to have you stop by and see the salon if you're around, or give us a call. And,
right.
Know, that'd be great.
Green
Hair Company, in case you're...
Pardon me?
It's Green Hair Company. That's the name of
Green
the
Hair Company. Oh, I like that name.
Yeah.
Green Hair Company. Okay. Well, great. Thanks for calling in. Thanks so much, Mimi. Really appreciate it.
You're
a lot of
welcome.
Good
Thank you so
ideas.
Much.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay. Well, that was Mimi for her first... I guess she's in the World Peace Diet Facilitator Program. There's a couple of people that have their hands up that would like to say something, so I think I'll go ahead and move through that, and then we'll try to get to these other things right after that. So we have Lisa, our good friend Lisa Levinson has her hand up. Before I unmute your phone, Lisa, I'll just say a few words. Lisa is a really close friend of ours, and also Judy Carmen, who's quite often with us. Lisa works a lot with veganism and spirituality, and has started a veganism and spirituality retreat in Philadelphia, and also now in Southern California, where she's moved. And last year, I spoke at both of those. This year, Judy Carmen is speaking. Lisa, can you would you like to say a few words about what's happening?
Sure. Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Will. Yes, I'm very excited about your conversation tonight, because you were talking a bit about vegan spirituality just in your discussions about some of the Eastern religions, and I really appreciated that. That is the crux of it, and the ahimsa and some of the other
right.
terms that you were using. Those are very familiar to us as part of the vegan spirituality community. And what we do each year is we gather together, and we host a different speaker. Like, Will, you spoke for us 1 year, and that was very special. And this year we're having Judy Carmen, who's going to share her thoughts about vegan spirituality. And we're really exploring, what does it mean to have veganism be your spiritual practice? And so we do that by, you know, gathering together. We do yoga, we meditate, we take a walk in nature to connect with nature, have some vegan food together. We have a discussion about veganism and what it means to us. And it's just a time to really gather together and just create that type of spiritual community. And we're doing that this year, coming up very soon on October 11th in the area near Philadelphia. It's called Gladwin, Pennsylvania. And if anybody's in the area or curious or would love to participate in something like this, you can go to veganspirituality.com, and there's information. You can even register for the event online. One of the things that we do that's very special is we have a community ritual that honors the animals who are companion animals in our lives. It's a blessing of the animals, but it really extends beyond that and honors animals who are non-human animals that are suffering around the world in various industries, and we do a ritual each year to honor them, and it's a very special, special time. So I'm just
Great.
Delighted to be able to share that with everyone, and just to thank you so much, Will, for what you've brought to this community. I mean, you're such a wonderful spokesperson for this, and just such an I have so much admiration for what you do and appreciate it so much. And I'm also very excited about your meditation, the eight meditations that you're offering, and I would love to help promote that in every way I can.
Okay, great. Well, I'll keep you posted. It should be coming out, hopefully, like I say, in the next couple of months. So, yeah, we'll stay in touch about that. Great. All right. Well, thanks, Lisa. I want to underline what you said. If you're interested, if you know anybody or you yourself might be free October 11th and you're in the Philadelphia area, the Vegan Spirituality Retreat is, last year was a wonderful retreat. I'm sure it will be this year too. It's great to be able to really focus and make those connections. So, thanks, Lisa. We'll
thank you so much, Will. Thank you very much.
All right. Talk to you later. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, thank you, Lisa Levinson. Yeah, that's and Judy, our good old friend Judy Carman. I think it's a wonderful. She's really walks the talk, and she'll be a great facilitator this year for that event for sure. She wasn't able to make it to the call this evening. Because actually the reason she couldn't make it to the call is because she is hosting, or she's part of the hosting of a showing tonight of the film Cowspiracy in Kansas, where she lives. And it was great to hear also that Mimi said something about showing Cowspiracy as well. I think, again, that's one of the best things we can do probably to help bring the vegan message to our community, besides having World Peace study groups, is to have a screening of Cowspiracy and have a question and answer about that. It's really an excellent tool, I think, for bringing the discussion to people, both vegans and non-vegans or pre-vegans as well. So, we'll be actually, there's going to be another screening in San Francisco. Well, Madeline, I'll be going to in a couple of weeks. We'll be answering questions for that. I think I'll get it up on our calendar pretty soon. And okay, so there's actually a couple more people. We have Grace. I think this is our wonderful friend Grace. I'm going to unmute you, your phone, Grace. Are you there?
Yes. Good evening. God bless you.
Thank you. Great to hear your voice.
Thank you. I'm so very grateful for this opportunity and this fellowship, and what an awesome treat that Lisa was on the call, and I was blessed to be there at the Vegan Spirituality Retreat where you spoke, and it was such a powerful experience, and I even participated in some of the Vegan Spirituality Meetup experiences when I lived in Southern California there, and it's very powerful and uplifting and inspiring, and it's just really a really wonderful experience. And I raised my hand some time ago because you had touched upon the welfarism or abolition, and kind of talked about like this continuum and how everything is what vegan is. And one of the resources that you had shared with us this month was that very interesting article from the Direct Action Everywhere website. And sir, I was wondering if you, I don't know, if it's kind of one of those theoretical or philosophical things, but if you would share a little bit more about on what's happening there, I sure would appreciate it. I hope others would too.
Okay, so thanks, Grace. You're talking about the article "Bridges and Walls" by Wayne Shung, I think,
yeah.
Right? That I have on the resources,
okay.
Right? Well, you know, it's. It's kind of a somewhat complicated series of issues, but basically, I just thought he did a pretty good job of articulating sort of the dynamic that can happen in the animal rights vegan movement, where people have different perceptions of the best way to proceed, and he was talking about how he had this wonderful connection with Bob Linden, and they were building all these bridges, and they were all excited, you know, doing interviews and spreading the vegan message and having this vegan big vegan conference coming up in March, and then he did something that Bob didn't like. He slept I guess in the same house at Bruce Friedrich's house. You know, you're not supposed to do that, I guess. And talked to him and said that Bruce Friedrich was doing good work. And so now the bridge that was so wonderful has become this wall, because now Bob has condemned him, and I'm not sure if, you know, Gary Francione is behind that or what. But, you know, he's just basically saying, you know, that, well, you can read the article, people can read their article themselves. And I think, you know, we have to just, from my point of view, I try to just keep away from passing judgment on other vegans and other activists and their methods. I think we everybody has their own style, and we have our own unique path, and we try to, I think everybody brings something to the table that can be helpful. However, the main point that I think Wayne does not make, but which I would make, is the importance of really doing spiritual practice as part of going vegan. And because I think it's easy, if we don't do that, to fall into a very dualistic approach and black and white kind of approach, where, you know, you're with us and you're not with us, and you're good and you're not good, and it becomes quite divisive. And ultimately, one of the points that I made last month, but I'll make it again, is that if we think really that certain organizations are not doing good work, we'd like to get rid of them. First of all, I think it's important to remember that a lot of these groups, like Mercy for Animals and Compassion for Killing, especially also PETA and IDA, I think a number of them, all of them, Farm Sanctuary, spend quite a bit of their resources on what I would call vegan education. I mean, they have vegan starter kits. They may call them vegetarian starter kits, but they are vegan. They're spreading the vegan message. They are spreading the vegan message with a lot of what they're doing, and yet they're also doing something that a lot of animal rights activists despise, which is, it's referred to as single issue campaigns. So I'll just focus on one bad thing that's happening. Maybe it's horses in New York City, or it's a circus, or it's elephants, or it's whatever it is. And and people don't like that, because they say that that's, you know, you're just focusing on part of the problem. We should just focus on doing vegan education. But the fact that I think really is, and this is sort of one of the issues, is that these organizations, really, in order for them to function, they have to raise money and to be able to hire people and to be able to print things and put and run websites and do the vegan education that they're doing. And you don't raise a lot of money by just doing vegan education. You know, it's just, people aren't going to just open up their wallets and pay a lot of money. Say, oh, you're doing vegan education, great, I'll give you $1,000. Because most people aren't vegan. So they do other things, like try to that appeal to a larger base of the population to raise funds, and then they can use that money for vegan education. So I don't see that as being necessarily a terrible thing, because if they are doing that, I think it's actually one way that we can broaden our the number of people that we're reaching with the vegan message. And the other thing is that even if we say that these groups, like the Humane Society especially, has come under a lot of attack recently because of the Hoofinit event that they were a main sponsor for, where it was you're probably all aware of it, but 4 days recently in Denver, they were sponsoring an event where people ate buffalo meat one night and then cow meat, I think, one night, and pig meat another night, and sheep, I think it was, whatever it was, four animals, and people were so upset about that. And but the underlying thing, I guess, we have to remember is that the Humane Society from the very beginning was never about veganism, and now it's become somewhat more questioning animal agriculture and promoting veganism. It's become under fire both by the meat and dairy industries and also by animal rights activists. for doing, you know, both welfare and animal rights things. But if for some, you know, if somehow you could just wave a magic wand and make the Humane Society disappear because you don't like them, it's something virtually the same would appear, I'm sure, within a few months again and grow and be just as big as one is now, because the fact is that we have literally millions of people in the United States who do care about animals, who do want to give money to support an organization that will help animals in their minds somewhat, and it's not going to be making them uncomfortable by really promoting veganism too strongly. But that's going to have that's the nature of having of the society we live in today. That's a capitalist society where people are eating animals. So there's going to be an organization like the Humane Society. There's no way around it. And instead of condemning them to just do what we can do ourselves, which I think is to grow spiritually and to be the best advocate for veganism that we can be, which I can say with confidence, I think all of you who are on this call are part of that, and to focus on that without getting too, I wouldn't say it's bad to get distracted by these internal issues. It's maybe unavoidable. I remember just the other day I read, you may all be aware of this, that Martin Luther King himself said that for him about 20% of his energy went into actually advocating for equality for non-white people, and 80% of his energy went into dealing with the dissension within the movement, you know. So this is nothing unique to animal rights or veganism. This is just sort of, you know, kind of goes with the territory. You have people that really feel strongly about things. So to spend more of our, you know, of our energy bringing the message, I think that's the most important thing. And I do want to emphasize, too, that what Grace is doing is something that we just, we just had a dry run recently of a Skype session. It's actually a Google Hangout session. So Grace will be is putting out the word to people in South Carolina, in Charleston, right, in the Charleston Public Library. And I guess next Monday night, people will go in there, and if all goes well, I will be sitting here in California and deliver a short lecture on the Mean Edges and World Peace Diet via Google Hangout, and there'll be a television or TV screen or projector or something, and a speaker, and people can hear me, and then we can do an interactive Q&A session afterwards. We just did this last night, or yesterday afternoon, in Grand Rapids, and it actually went really well, I have to say. It was there was 25 people that showed up in Grand Rapids at the basement of one of the progressive churches in Grand Rapids, and this woman from Korea who's very gung-ho about the World Peace Diet, Kyung-hae Kim, set it all up, and she actually had people give donations, which was nice, and then and provided some vegan refreshments beforehand, and then people, it was hooked up, and I spoke, and then we did Q&A afterwards with some excellent questions. It was really great sharing. And when I do this, I'm sitting actually on the piano bench, and the little iPad I'm using is on the music stand for the piano, so I can play a little piano music too. So it was all fun, yeah. So if any one of you who are listening, if you want to, you know, if we're not coming to your area in a long time, maybe for some reason, feel free to try setting something up like that, because we can do that anytime. You know, it's just great. It's really this new freedom to set up an event, have people come, and it's very interactive and it's a very intimate feeling. It was a great feeling, and I just got an email from her. People were delighted. They loved it. They felt like I was right there in the room, and which I was really. I mean, I was right there talking to them and answering questions and so forth. So it's quite remarkable how well it actually does work, and that's, to me, you know, we don't like getting in a car and driving 2.5 hours to the airport and flying somewhere. We do kind of like traveling in our RV, so we'll probably be doing that here and there too. But basically, this is a great option. So thanks, Grace, for thinking of it, and we're looking forward to the one in Charleston on Monday.
Oh yes, oh well, yes, thank you. Oh, that's one more question. It's kind of a business thing separate, but maybe it could be useful for everybody on the call now and in the future.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering, I have some different literature. I'm sure that not everybody who's attending will be a vegan,
or a vegan advocate. So I was wondering if there was any kind of literature in particular that you would think, since I do have 2 weeks, I would have some time to order some. I have a farm, Live Vegan, the Trifold brochure. I have Nutrition for Your Kids by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. I have a small selection of some things from Karen Davis at UPC about eggs. And I think I still have a few brochures from humanemyth.org. I'm really excited because there is a local vegan restaurant that is about to open downtown, not far from where the library is. They'll be opening in October, but the chef there today replied to a Facebook request and said she'd be happy to bring some light refreshments. So I thought, so we're going to do a whole thing, and I'll be applying with Veg Fund. So if there's any other kind of literature or if there's any other kind of literature you think would be ideal, or if there's any of that that you wouldn't prefer to have present, would appreciate some direction.
Right. Yeah, no, I think those things you mentioned are all very good that I'm aware of. There's quite a few different vegan starter kits. Sometimes they're called vegetarian starter kits put out by MFA, COK, and Farm Sanctuary, all three of them, and PETA. All four of them have them that I think are good because they're all totally vegan food, plant-based food, and a lot of them give some of the reasons, too, why it's important, you know, the animal cruelty and environmental things. And so that's good, and it gives people recipes that they can try, which I think is really helpful and practical. And maybe I can send you some of Madeline's intuitive cookings. That would be something you could, you know, that's a nice one sheet with some good, with vegan recipes and shopping lists. And I could send you a few of the World Peace Diet Mastery Program, things if people want to get involved with the World Peace Diet and become World Peace Diet facilitators. That's a little, postcard, basically, that may be interesting for some people since they'll be listening to these ideas in the World Peace Diet. And I think stuff by PCRM is excellent, too. I think that's really excellent. So I just trust your judgment. You know, whatever you think is good. It's changing all the time, and quite honestly, I can't keep up with it. I mean, this stuff, there's always new things coming. It's a profusion of vegan literature out there. There's so many different things, and so I think you're doing a great job. You know, just you can, and most of a lot of the groups are willing to send stuff for either for free or for minimal amount of money, which is great too. So use it. You know, I think it's fantastic. It really helps.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much, Will. God bless you.
All right. Take care, Grace. Thanks so much for being on the call, and look forward to our event on Monday. Take care.
Excellent. Good night.
Yeah. Okay, good night. All right, and then we have one more. We have our wonderful friend Mark Stroud from Cincinnati. We haven't heard from Mark for a while, but I'm just unmuting Mark's phone, and Mark, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for all you're doing in Cincinnati and all you have done to help. As a lot of people know, you were one of the probably the first one, actually, to ever have a World Peace Diet study group and to begin this whole movement of people getting together and discussing the ideas of the World Peace Diet and creating a vegan community in Cincinnati based on the ideas in the World Peace Diet of spirituality and then bringing it, you know, with the whole yoga community as well. And it's just great to see this is since probably, I would say now close to 7 or 8 years going on. So congratulations for all the work you've been doing. And I know you're still continuing on and working with the local community there. And you're a great inspiration. So thanks for joining us on the call.
Well, thank you, Will. I'm really glad to be here. It's been a while since I've been on the call and able to share a little bit, and really inspired by the beginning of the call and the conversation about spirituality. and really enjoyed listening to Lisa, and really inspired by Mimi and the Green Hair Company. I'm really looking forward to getting in touch with her, because we have been creating a spiritual urban village, and so to have a vegan business like that, vegan hair care, a kind of a vegan spa, that's just right up our alley to have as part of the spiritual urban village, to go along with the vegan yoga studio and the vegan restaurant, as you said, that you're more likely to associate veganism with that. And at the same time, it struck me how important it is to, it seems like a lot of the call now, I know you have other things to say, has been about veganism and spirituality. And it's interesting to me, because we have a vegan yoga studio that we've been operating for, oh, I think 9 years now. And so the World Peace Diet, of course, is a central reading and part of our teacher training program, and the tenets of it are actually part of a part of our daily classes. And the fact that vegan is really, as you said earlier, just another way of practicing ahimsa, which is really the heart and soul of a spiritual yoga practice, which has been around for 4,000 or 5,000 years. And so,
right.
Whereas even Pythagoras, when, as you say in the book, that when that which is about 2,500 years ago, that people called themselves Pythagoreans because they were practicing a vegetarian lifestyle, or more recently with Watson in the 1940s, a vegan, that yoga has been around for so long. And unfortunately, especially in the West, yoga is seen as asana, which are the
right.
My friend calls that part of yoga Indian calisthenics.
right.
Whereas really there are maybe 16 tenets of yoga, and 9 of them have to do with meditation. So really the more important part of yoga, even more important than asana, which is what most people see as yoga, is really meditation and karma, or service, service to others, and especially a service to others who are the most malign, which we know are the agricultural animals and the way they're treated. So the spiritual practice that's really been around for 4,000 or 5,000 years, most people that I know that are vegan are already yogis and are already practicing yoga. They just don't know it.
Right.
And the fact that they can then have some structure to follow and to participate in on a daily basis, whether it's meditation, which could be any kind of meditation, or service, or just singing or chanting, or any way that they're developing their intuition, which I know has been a huge part of your work. All of these things are really the essence of what this is all about. So it keeps people on keel and keeps people balanced, and that's what we see is so necessary. And I think that more and more of that becomes a centerpiece of the movement, then there'll be less dissension and arguments, and realizing that it's really about not just what we eat, which is the main focal point, but it's everything that we say, everything that we do, taking an inventory of all of those things 24/7. And as she said, as Mimi was saying, when she looked into the fertilizer, when we start to look at all those things, that it's not just food, it's everything that we do that we're constantly questioning, everything that we think that we're constantly questioning. And so to be able to associate with other people and the possibility of a vegan hair salon, I'm inspired.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, vegan vegan clothing store, vegan health spa, vegan restaurant, and really creating vegan communities based on in local farms and gardens communities. One of the World Peace Diet facilitators, Michael Landfield, is, of course, some of you are aware, is has his big, one of his main goals is to create a vegan community where people actually live together and practice veganism on a piece of land somewhere. And I think that's a great idea as well. It's it takes a lot of doing to do that, but that's what really helped me go vegan, was to be at the farm. And also Sun Longsa Zen Monastery in Korea was also actually a big vegan community of people living together and meditating. So these are also great ideas that we can in some ways either directly or indirectly support. And like what you're doing in Cincinnati, Mark, and you've been doing it, like you say, for the last 9 years, with the not only with the Jubilee yearly vegan spirituality conferences, but with the yoga classes and with just the whole creating a vegan community there, it really it just percolates out and ripples out into the entire fabric of the city. So I just think this is something. It's a great example of how we can, all of us, through just linking up with the other people and combining the spiritual practice with veganism, how that just resonates with people and creates a much more powerful movement. So thanks, Mark, for letting us know, and keep us posted on any new developments. I'm sure we'll be hearing some more things.
Yeah, I'll just leave one last thing. We're still in the beginning stages, or actually in the middle stages of this project, but I'll just ask everyone to keep their ears and eyes out for a vegan Project NOAA that is coming up, and there's going to be we've done some local regional funding, and we're about to do a national, international crowdfunding. So just everybody keep their eyes open for the Project NOAA that will be coming up real soon.
Great. All right, Project NOAA. We'll definitely keep everybody apprised of that. If I hear about it, I'm sure I will. So, great. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk later.
Thank you, Will. Thank you very much.
Great. Sure. Right. Yeah. Okay. So, it's now here it is. I can't believe it's already. We only have a few minutes left before we should really wrap up. I know people on the East Coast. It's already 10:30 at night. I apologize. I know it's so late here. It's in California. It's almost 7:30, and I know, of course, living in the RV, most of the time it seemed like it was about 10:30 when we were beginning to wrap this up, and so I understand it's late. So I want to just say a few things here going forward. Thank you all, everyone who has participated, and thank you all who have not actually spoken, but I know just having your energy and presence with us is really helpful. We send our love to you. Please, if you have a chance, look over the resources for the World Peace Diet Circle for September 2014. I won't go through everything, but there's some great stuff here, actually. There's some articles that I wrote in the beginning here recently, and videos and things, and then some of the most, newer research that's coming out on all different levels. Vegan myth-busting, eating meat gave our ancestors bigger brains on some of these things. I like this one, 12 Reasons Why Cowspiracy is the Next Blackfish, which we're hoping will really begin to have a big impact like Blackfish has had. And I won't go through all these things, but actually there's a couple of spoofs here. This one, 8 Reasons Going Vegan is Not for Everyone, I think is one of the best I've seen. If you have a chance to read that, I think it's great. I'll give it away. It's like the first one is, going vegan is not for you if you really enjoy torturing animals, and don't be a vegan. Going vegan is not for you if you really enjoy destroying the earth, so forth. But anyway, there's also this great video you've got to watch, the Beagle Freedom Project. It's only about 4 or 5 minutes, but it's to see these poor little beagles who had spent their entire lives in cages and were totally afraid of being touched by humans because they'd been just harmed continuously, to see them actually liberated and walking and then running and then jumping on the grass in the backyard of somebody's house. It just shows how these animals are models to us of resilience, of forgiveness, of joy, of creativity, of celebration. These beings don't, we should be ashamed of ourselves, really. I mean, you see how beautiful these animals are. Anyway, there's a lot more here. I think this thing on Alan Savory is important. You know, that got so much press, this guy who's done a lot of his own kind of rogue research saying that animal agriculture is the best thing you can do for the environment. And that's being really debunked everywhere. So anyway, I won't go on. There's a lot of great articles there and good information on every level about animal behavior and health and environmental things and so forth. I do also want to say a few things about what happened since the last month and going forward for the next month. Since our last meeting in August, we've given lectures in quite a few different places in San Francisco for the Vegetarian Society. In San Diego, which was quite interesting recently, spoke at the Loving Hut there, which, again, Loving Hut, I think, is one of the great vegan advocacy movements on the planet right now. And then the next morning, there's a psychology conference, a very large one, on trauma. It's basically PhDs and researchers, educators in the field of trauma. And for the very, very first time ever, they actually had a panel on this at this conference on trauma in animals and how our abuse of animals affects us. And so I was able to be on that panel with two other people. One of them was Lauren Ornelas, who you probably are familiar with perhaps from the Food Empowerment Project. And it was put on by, it was kind of facilitated by Casey Taft, who is the publisher of this publisher in Boston called Vegan Publishers, who is publishing the book that's coming out that I'm the editor of, which will be coming out in October, hopefully, maybe early November, but he's working on trying to get it out and actually published, called Circles of Compassion, Connecting Issues of Justice. We've got 30 vegan expert, basically people who work in the fields of racism, sexism, classism, environmental devastation, so forth, all these different social justice issues, hunger and so forth, and the connection between that and animal abuse and animal agriculture. So anyway, he's the publisher of that, and he was able to set this all up, and that was very interesting. And we were just planting a small seed, I think, but hopefully this will be growing. I was on a radio program here in Lake County. It's great to see even locally here among people the vegan message is spreading, also at Harbin Hot Springs, which is one of the local resorts here, and as I said, by Skype in Grand Rapids. At Unity, it was so nice. Madeline and I were at Unity Church a few weeks ago down in San Ramon, and we were doing basically a presentation on intuition development and the Sunday morning service and so forth, and then speaking later for a vegan group in San Ramon. But the Unity Church, without any prompting on our part, served a dinner between the service and the workshop that was entirely vegan. So they just took it upon themselves to do it and surprised us without even telling us. And everyone, it was just wonderful. I mean, the food was really good. So these are all, I think, basically indicators that veganism is really becoming something that is not, people aren't irritated about. They're celebrating it. They're happy to support the compassion and intuition development that veganism, I think, is really pointing to. I also want to let everybody know that our plan basically is at this point to, besides going to Boston and being doing something around New England, we have, and then San Francisco Veg Fest, of course, and some other things. You can see it on our schedule. In the beginning of the year, probably January, February, and March, we're planning on in getting in our good old trusty Dharma, our RV, and doing a tour to Southern California, Arizona, and New Mexico, and Texas, and Florida. And so if you are in those areas or know anyone who's in those areas, we're planning on setting up a bunch of events and spreading the vegan message throughout the southern part of the United States. And then after that, when we come back, we're planning on also going to Hawaii and speaking there, and also, we haven't been there for 5 years, and then also for the very first time going to Korea, because the World Peace Diet has been doing quite well in Korea, and so that's one of the links, I think, in this whole thing. It'll be great to go back there, so that'll be in April. And then finally, if you are in Europe, we know people in Europe are planning this summer to do the first real European tour. So the World Peace Diet now, thanks to Stefan Goodwin, he's translated World Peace Diet into both French and German and has helped shepherd it through, I shouldn't use the word shepherd, but, you know, helped move it through the publication phase in both French and German, and it's released in German. It will be released before long in French, which is great, also in Italian, and in fact, October 1st, I'll be receiving the Empty Cages Award by the Italian publisher via Skype here, but we'll be then next summer speaking in France, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, and Italy, and England, also speaking at the big London Veg Fest in September. So we have those things sort of on the horizon, just to let everybody know if you know folks or if you want to help out with anything or get involved. It would be wonderful to be able to work together. So it's really time to wrap up here. And again, I want to thank everyone, all of you, for being on the call. We have this great quote, I think, at the beginning. These two quotes at the beginning of the World Peace Diet Resources for September. The one of them is by B.K.S. Iyengar, one of the most famous of all the yoga teachers. He wrote this: "The yogi believes that every creature has as much right to life, to live, as he has. He believes that he is born to help others, and he looks upon creation with eyes of love. He knows that his life is linked inextricably with that of others, and he rejoices if he can help them to be happy." That's really the essence of the vegan message, and it's beautiful to see one of the real icons of the yoga movement saying that. And then it's the first time I've ever had one of our facilitators put a quote at the top, but I just thought this was in her final exam assignment, and I thought it was really well said. She said, quote, "I think there is enormous potential for powerful vegan advocacy if we can turn that impression that vegans are telling people what to eat on its head and help people see that, in fact, others have been telling them all their lives what to eat, and they now have the chance to challenge these habits that were forced upon them and make different and better choices." And so I really think this is one of the main teachings in the World Peace Diet that we try to emphasize. This is one of the real keys, I think, to effective vegan advocacy, is to help people realize that when they're eating animal food, this is not a choice that they came to on their own. This is something that they are doing merely because they're following orders, and these orders are not in their best interest. And when we begin to help people understand that, we automatically release them from this basic feeling that we're right and they're wrong and we're trying to change them. It's just basically just to see that the behavior that we've all engaged in eating animal foods has been something that's been culturally programmed into us, and that by questioning it, we're not only helping ourselves, we're helping everyone. I also want to mention there's great things happening. I know Beth Redwood is putting on, helping with a study group in Portland, Oregon, and other people are also doing work in your local communities. I want to thank all of you, really, for the great work you're doing, and also remind everybody about Lily Macy's the Sunday, every Sunday. I mean, she's been doing this religiously, in a spiritually religious way, every single Sunday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, on the World Peace Diet Sunday. It goes a good hour, and then very often it goes longer after the hour is over, reading slowly the World Peace Diet, just reading the World Peace Diet together. It's a wonderful practice, and it's open to the public. It's no charge. It's just a great way to reconnect not only with the teachings in the World Peace Diet, but to also have a chance to share with other people who have a similar interest. and it's been going really well. It's touched a lot of people, and Lily lives way out where there's no internet access or anything, but she does this by a phone bridge. And not this coming Sunday, but the following Sunday, it's going to be a special one. So if you can all join us for that one, Madeline and I both will be on that call. They're now in Chapter 14, which is, as you remember, in the World Peace Diet, is a chapter about the individual journeys that we all live, and I talk a little bit about my journey in there. And so Madeline and I are going to be on that call, and we're going to talk about our journey and our journey together, and Madeline will be talking about her understanding of veganism and what she contributes to the whole ministry through her being, her cooking, her awareness, her meditation, and so forth, and also about how veganism affects our lives sort of personally and how we met and all that stuff too. So it should be a lot of fun, and join us if you can for that one. If you're wondering about the phone number to call and all that, I'll put it on the recording that I always send out, and also it's always, if you go to worldpeacediet.com or worldpeacediet.org or worldpeacediet.com, any of the websites, and just click on schedule, it's right at the top of the schedule, the Sunday evening, the information, so it's right there. All right, so those are all some of the things I really wanted to get to. I also was hoping, which I have time, but I don't, when we were in speaking in San Francisco, the Vegetarian Society event a few weeks ago, a woman came all the way from India, and she said one of the main reasons she came was so she could hear me speak, which I was kind of amazed to hear that. But anyway, she really wanted, and then after I was finished with my talk, she asked me a question about dairy. And she really wanted me to talk about dairy and about the inherent cruelty in dairy, especially from the point of view of people who are from India. And in India, you know, the cows are part of the family. There's these small, you know, just family operations, and how could that be bad? And so I actually was on KPFA, I guess it is, in Houston recently, and I spoke for probably 45 minutes on that subject. And I was hoping to get into that a little bit tonight, but there just wasn't time. So hopefully maybe next month we can talk a little bit more about the dairy issue, because I know in the yoga community, as well as many other communities, spiritual communities, being vegetarian spiritual communities, there's a real resistance to giving up dairy and a real underlying idea that dairy is something given to us by cows. So to again, refine our understanding of this, I think is important. So I will try to, if you remind me, if I forget, but I'm making a note to myself right now to talk about this next month as well. All right, so that's it. Thank you very much, all of you, for joining us. We are just delighted that we've been able to share this way, the next gathering for our World Peace Diet Circle in this way will be on Thursday, October 16th. And I really appreciate all the efforts you're all making to help bring this message to the world. No effort is ever lost. May you all be happy and free, and may we all continue to build a world of compassion and kindness for all living beings. And so it is. Thanks again for joining us.